So my own welcome to everyone. My own welcome to everyone. The one quality that a teacher can't impart is the passion to learn. That's what makes the Dharma the most important thing, is that we're growing out of ourselves. We're growing out of our constricted life into a life of abundance, really. It's just that simple. But it has to be the most important thing, because what counterweights the need to do that are the allures that many of us still have to the life we have been living, which is the perceptual life of objects and things and me, and the embellishment of all that pleasure can offer. And never mind the pain that's associated with that life. I can try to make my life more navigable by moving around the pain and trying to pursue the pleasure. And so that theme of life interrupts the life of abundance. It's an opaque screen. You can't see through it. And so for most of us, there's a long period of time where the screen, the complete denial that there is anything other than the life we are living plays forth in terms of our actions and speech and body and mind. And even when we hear that the possibility exists, you're welcome to come in and sit down. And yeah, okay. For the longest period of time, for myself, speaking personally, I wasn't sure it was true. It's like, are these people, I'm not sure. And that doubt of that life could be anything more than what I've known it to be kept me, it would undermine the passion and the urgency that I also felt that was a component of my life. It would undermine that component of the yearning of the heart that seeks non-separation, seeks the seat of existence. What's the source of existence, which I was mentioning yesterday, is what drives the spiritual journey. Just seems so kind of otherworldly, you know. And even though some of my teachers radiated that possibility and felt their passion, I was just kind of dead in myself. The deadness of myself would not tolerate the aliveness that I was alongside. And I think that is not unusual. I don't think I was unusual in that way, because over the years I've spoken to many, many people and peers that phrased differently, that's pretty much holds us in place and keeps us from everything, really. That's why it's so important for everyone to have a core of honesty within them. Because you don't deny that that's there. I didn't deny it was there. But the allure of the possibility became more prevalent, became more emphatic than the deadness I was feeling of that there wasn't a possibility. And so that it started to shift as insights began to occur in me. So that as I began to see from a new perspective, it gave me a kind of reassurance that eventually dissipated the doubt. Eventually. It took years, but eventually it dissipated the doubt. And those of us who have the pleasure and the accompanying responsibility to share Dharma have to have the honesty to be able to tell you what we really see. So there's no pretension here. This isn't book learning. I don't stand up here and tell you what I've read. I tell you what I've realized. And I have to be extraordinarily honest with myself that the reading doesn't, what's the word, influence the realization. Because that's where there would be a lie. Not a lie in the fact that it isn't true and that I haven't realized it, but a lie about the transmission that's occurring as a teacher speaks, which is at the heart of allowing you to come out of your doubt and into your own realization. I needed that honesty, and I would look for teachers who would offer that honesty. I wasn't interested in playing around. I was never that type of student. But I also knew, and I could feel in every teacher I ever practiced with, their value and their limitation. And you should see that in every teacher you practice with. What they offer and what they have yet to fully realize. And you sense it. But you don't dismiss the realization. The realization is the truth communicating itself to your heart. And that is the direct transmission of Dharma. And so I want us to have the relationship, which usually comes on the second day of retreat, of that channel of honesty between one another. So that the more you open to the words of the Sthite, the more you will leave your doubt behind, if you still have any. And to encourage you out of your doubt is an extraordinary occurrence that you will have, where suddenly you'll come out and go, oh my God, nobody... Nobody was lying to me. It's true. My God. That's my wish for our community today. And you begin to see the value of that, you know. I was speaking with Alan on the way over here, and we were just talking about all the presidents that I've lived through and she has lived through. And I said, none of them had ever fooled me. None of them. Every single one of them, their administration was an exact representation of the person I felt they were as they were being elected. None of them. And it's because when you fine-tune yourself to honesty, you fine-tune yourself to the other person's authenticity as well. And that's not always a easy perception to have, but it's one that you want to be as honest and as integritous as you can in life, Because you realize that even if it's not a direct transmission of somebody's dishonesty to you, you're being influenced by it. And even though you couldn't say that this particular person is like this, you're being influenced by all the time. Everyone, all the time, in the group, all of us together are influencing each other, always, forever. And so you see that you don't want to impart anything that doesn't allow an avenue to truth. And so it's not a idealism, it's just the fact, you know, that you don't want that to happen because you don't want that pain of your own personal self-obstructions, where you're lost in your own personal, to be a part of the landscape of lives. And you see the value of the precepts. You see that. Because really what I'm talking about is that. So once we start cleaning up our own doubt, once we can at least maneuver our practice through our doubt so that the doubt doesn't obstruct our energy to do, what takes over is the longing of the heart. That is the force of the universe. That cannot be denied. For those of you who were trying to make a decision as whether to come today or not, or whatever, some of you decided not to. The longing of the heart wasn't sufficient to bring you here. Your grandmother's birthday was more important, which is, I'm not dismissing or complaining, but those of you who did attend for whatever reason, because you didn't place obstructions between you, came partially because of that longing. And you start nourishing that longing in every person. That's what Dharma is. That's what Sangha is. It's the nourishment of our own longing by being with people who collectively feel that. And that's what the Dharma does. When you hear a Dharma talk, it brings that out, or should bring that out. It's like, whoa, what's going on here? Not the fear aspect of it, like, where is this guy going? This is too much for me. But the wonder of it. God, I don't understand a word he's saying, but man, I remember hearing Dharma talks by very, very senior Zen Yuroshis, and I don't understand a thing that person is saying. But I knew he was saying something. And I was just like, whoa! So that's the longing. It's beyond making sense. And it's beautiful because it builds on itself. That's what you gather, and you have a couple of days of hopeful inspiration to take us out and allow us to move kind of uplifted before the world's tragedies and our own difficulties pull us back. Remember this as that transition back to our own tragedies occur. The possibility of stepping out is real. Now you can play with it as much as you want. You can play around, you can take your time. I encourage everyone to go at their own speed. But don't forget that fact. If you want to end it, your suffering, and step out of our self-centered ways, the gate is open. It's an open gate. And so we're having fun. I mean, I'm having fun. Because I like to invite aliveness into the talks and into the group itself. Just don't forget that it can be everlastingly yours. It's not the speaker's. It's no one's possession. People behind me, or not people behind me, the people behind me, people, some of the staff say, when you would like the lights on, you know, and you turn on all those lights and it's like, hey, there's actually a rainbow that goes around the Buddha's head, and it's, you know, it's a little bit like, okay, this is my perception, and I'm not, but this is really, I want the Buddha to be life-size. I want him to be a human being. I want him to be down to earth, because that's what the Dharma is. That's what you don't transcend yourself. You include yourself in the transcendence. And he can't fit through a needle. But your transcendence can. So I want needle size. Huh? We say the Buddha was a human. In our tradition, we say the Buddha was a human being, and then we will allow him to be a human being. We make him into a god. And now, what happened to the human being? Well, you put on somebody who's omniscient and omnipresent, and human beingness. You don't lose it. We don't lose that. We don't lose that. Thank God we don't lose that. So what was I supposed to talk about today? So let me go, okay, here's an announcement I was going to make. That what we'll do, you know, in the times between sittings, and this room will be quiet. Okay, I really ask you to hold to the silence in this room. If you'd like to quietly whisper to each other outside of it, that's, you can do that. But let's keep this room quiet. It's too much a part of my training. I don't know if it has anything to do with anything else, but it's too much in my bones. And I do believe that when a certain value of Dharma growth occurs in communication, through communication, but that's much harder. You can see how hard it is, because what does your life look like dharmically in the middle and the throes of conversation, as opposed to just being quiet with oneself. Quiet, quietude. So the theme of this weekend has been and will continue to be growing up, showing up, and waking up. Growing up, we went through yesterday, and that is the spirit of finding a steadiness in us. If you take the average person off the street, they don't even know where they are. They don't even know the circumstances. All it is reaction, cause and effect, reaction, reactivity. A life of conditioning. That's how most of us live, or have lived, before we got into the Dharma. And that's a very painful way of living. And so when a Dharma student starts, the first and most important process is the stabilizing of this. And that's what Dharma instruction is meant to do. It's meant to stay, so you're not self-critical. Self-criticism, that's the problem. What I should be like, what I think you think of me, and trying to change my image to suit your perception of me. What I want of myself, which is far more horrendous, what I want myself to be like, which I'm not. It's not what I am. It's what I'm not. And that drives us crazy, because no matter how much we obtain what I want to be, it's not good enough. Because the mechanism of the mind, the way it looks, is evaluative. It's, this is good, but this is better. And as long as we have that evaluation going on, we are never settled. We're never settled. You're not sitting well enough. You're not quiet enough. You're not anything enough. And so taking that on is a... The reason you do it is because you can't live with it anymore the way it has been. And so it's a monumental task, but you do it, because you can't live with yourself without it. And when you're driven to the point of such despair, you got to do it. And that's the heart's mechanism. It usually takes you to the point of despair of the limitations of the world we're in before you're even willing to open the door to the next one. So once we get this stabilized so that we know, so we have some stability of mind and heart, basically, that you have some way of working with this thing that isn't all-consuming. All right? Then we can move into showing up. From that sense of stability, and only from that sense of stability, which is a forever journey of greater stability, into greater stability, but there's a point, a threshold that's reached within each of our stabilities as you practice, that now you can start looking around and see, what is life? What is this about? What's going on here? What is all this about? Is it about what culture has told me I need to do, what I need to be? What is it deep in me? Where is my deepest yearning? And is there any space for that? Or is it being smothered? And mostly it's being smothered, because what the culture at large can't tolerate is your independence of it. And so it keeps you conditioned to it, which is another humongous journey out of it, because you're constantly looking over your shoulder and all your friends are going left and you're saying, I don't want to go left. They're defining their lives according to their conditioned reference of what a good life is. But that's not a good life for most of us in this room. Or at least it's a partial life. It's not a complete life. So you have to really journey down from the stability of the mind that growing up gave us. Now I can ask those questions fundamental to the spirit of my journey within this life. What do I want this life to be about? Both in terms of meaning and purpose, intention. And you, as we contemplate what life is, you see how miserable it is for most people. And we're the affluent ones. At every corner, there are those less fortunate. And suddenly it dawns on one, and through this phase it begins to dawn, because when we grow up, when we steady the mind, it's not, the steadiness takes us out of every thought being ours, out of the I, me, and mine phase of what life looks like just from that perspective. And so when we're showing up, that is when we have had enough stability of mind so that I can look out and contemplate life, we do it not from the self-centered only, not to say that that self-centered perspective is gone, but we begin to widen the reach of our understanding, of our awareness. And we begin to see what it's like for people outside of us. And suddenly, each phase of this, we are thinning the sense of self. Understand, when you first sit down on that cushion and somebody says, just be with your mind and don't add anything to it, especially criticism or judgment or whatever, just what is there? That's a thinning of yourself because you're not squabbling. Your growth comes from struggle, from struggling with yourself. So if you take that out of the lineup of who you are, you're less than you were in a good way. I don't mean less in potential. Your potential is more apparent. But you're less of the sense of conditioned self you used to be. Less of that conditioning. You don't even realize it because you still carry yourself around and you think, oh, I'm still me. I've always been me. But my heart feels a little different. But I don't know what's going on. Something's changing. I like it. It feels good. But I'm still me. So don't think it's going to be a big, you know, for most people, it's a gradual thinning. All right? And so it starts with the growing up and continues with the showing up. Because now in the contemplation of things beyond just your mind, its contraction around everything is about me, you're beginning to take in other people. You're genuinely beginning to feel for other people. You're beginning to genuinely care. Not artificially. And all of us has tried to artificially care. I love you, I love you, yeah. Doesn't work. It goes flat. It's like the piano needs tuning. But as this becomes less obsessive, the mind less obsessive, quieter. See, these are the causes of the sense of self. So if you're quieter, you have less of you available. If you're not squabbling, there's less of you. These are why you are who you have always thought yourself to be, because of your squabbling, your struggles, your comparisons, your all that. That's what it's built upon. And it's empty because it's just built upon me creating myself through my own struggle. If I stop struggling, I'm a thinner, more translucent me. And it feels good. You feel like your heart. It feels good. Now, those of us who have read the pages of the literature say, oh, there's going to be a time when there's not me around. That's terrifying. No. It's just take where you are now and advance the good feeling to that point. And now it's like this. Instead of just this far or wide, you're like, ah, whoa, this is really great. That's where the joy comes in. There's joy. Am I yelling at you? And so every step along the way as the thinning is occurring and less of you is the result, and the accompanying feeling of being less in you is really invigorating and enlivening. Listen to the words, cause enlivening, because you're closer to existence. All we've done is come closer to existence by being quieter. Oh, isn't that amazing? That's just amazing. Now some of you think, why is he stopping? I don't know what I'm gonna say. And so I'm stopping because I don't have anything to say. Not to know the reason. And you kind of, I hope something comes. I'm kind of, oh, never mind. All right. So we begin to get a sense of how this thing moves forward. Oh, there's something about quietude and the thinning of self. You see, when you think of yourself as an entity, it's an object, it's a thing, and you can't get over yourself. And you think this thing is following me all the way. No, it's not an entity. Don't think like that. When you think of yourself as a solid entity, there's just one leap out of yourself, which is scary as hell. Think of it as a thinning of yourself. At some point, it gets so thin that it becomes translucent. And guess what happens? Waking up. Right? Growing up, showing up, waking up. Suddenly, the confines of even this thin sense of me is perforated. There's a shift of identity at that point. As long as it's just thinning, there's still a sense of identity. And most of you, or many of you who have been practicing a long period, I don't know what you mean by non-self. I still feel like me. Fine. I can't overemphasize that. It's working on you. Let it work on you. Because as we expand, and include others, include the world around us, include perspectives other than our selfish one, we get very thin. The quieter we become, we get very thinned out. And then there's an eruption that occurs. Guaranteed. Right? Guaranteed. Guaranteed eruption. And the wind blows in. And for a moment, you see the possibility. You realize the possibility. It's realized. Now at that moment, you'll never believe in this thin sense. You won't even believe in the thinning of the self. You'll know that the self is not an entity. You'll know that you have been fooling yourself all along the way. Even though you've been thinning, you've been claiming your self-reference. Now that's taken away. But what really happened? You just thinned out. You lost sufficient weight. And the world has shown to you. Words aren't coming as easily, but just stay with the spirit of what I'm saying today. Now, for most people, in fact, everyone I've known, including myself, after a while, the whole repairs itself. But the thinning is very thin. And you go, okay, but I'm not fooled, because you've been transformed from that moment. You've been transformed. So even though but it gives you extraordinary confidence, certainty, no doubt, doubt's gone, certainty about where you're going. Because now you're thinning and you know yourself not to be substantial. So the thinning is that much easier because you don't take yourself to be a truth that keeps building walls. Even though for most of us, there's much more growing up that needs to be done. Okay? Because in the hidden layers of our minds are the conditioned, referenced reactivities, all of that, the assumptions we've made, the emotional regression. For most people, that's not completely healed. The rupture healed much of it. Healed a lot of it, but not completely. And so we'll still feel ourselves being reactive from time to time. Somebody looking at you will say, oh, he hasn't changed a bit. Here he is, yelling at me or whatever. that's a difficult time to be a teacher, because you want to transmit authentically, and sometimes what's authentic doesn't look very appealing. So now that the confidence, you see, all this started, I'm shifting back a few years or decades, all this started when you first sat down. The thinning started when you first sat down. The moment I accepted mindfulness, awareness, as a valid way to look, you could see its validity almost day one, although it scrambles everything. Everything scrambled in mindfulness. This culture is being scrambled because of the ubiquitousness of that teaching. First time you start looking, then you start separating. Much of what I want to do today is show you the value of what you're already doing, so you don't belittle it. And when you sit down, you begin to realize there's a component part of you that isn't conditioned. In fact, you can see the difference. You're looking at your breath, you're being present to the breath, and then you're also thinking about what you're being present to. Now, the thinking about what you're being present to is the conditioned aspect of the mind commenting on what you're doing, which is being aware of the breath. And over time, you begin to say, let the thought go, let the thought go, be with the present moment, just stay present on the breath. And you begin to see that there's two aspects. There's the awareness that sees the object, and then there's thoughts about what is going on with the object and how well I'm doing. And you begin, oh, there's two things going on here. And so, as you invite more practice into the awareness component and less into the judgmental component, this becomes a more reliable component in your life. Now, the mistake we make is we want to make it ours. We want this sense of being attentive and being aware to be ours, so that we can embellish the sense of me, because the me is very predominant in the early stages of meditation. It's full egoic sense of me still there, even though I've seen a little bit, which is a little bit of a thinning. The difference between the judgmental component of mind, which is forever, and the awareness, it's still, there's still X number of years of conditioning of the heavy, a conditioned component, right? But there's thinning. The moment you sit down and establish awareness on something, there's a thinning going on. I want to reemphasize that over and over. So the more I look, the more I free myself up from the burden of the conditioning. And the more I expand the possibility of awareness. But it's still me-driven. I'm doing it. And it's really hard, because the mind hasn't gone away, and the mind we believed in for X number of years, and we're not all of a sudden not supposed to believe in it or listen to it. It's impossible. So what happens for most people is you're aware a little bit and mostly you're not. You're aware a little bit and mostly you're not. And you don't feel like you're getting anywhere. It's because there hasn't been sufficient acclaim to the process you're going through. For most people, it's patience. You want things done quickly. You want to make this a weekend workshop where you can get out of here and be awake. But for most people in this tradition, it doesn't happen like that. And we get upset. We get worse. Oh, there's something far worse. You lose your joy of it. You see, when you first, it's like, whoa, this is amazing. And I loved teaching beginning classes because they'd come back all inspired for about 3 weeks. And then it was hard. And so then I would lose 25%. All right? So those of you who are here have gone through that period once. But it keeps coming back because you don't feel like you're growing. You don't feel like you're seeing anything new. So this weekend is also about imparting a way to see something new. It's giving you the skill of inquiry. So you can ask your own questions to see what's new for you. Why am I, instead of taking yourself as real, you ask questions about yourself. Why do I feel so uninspired? You see, you'd go anywhere. I don't want to own that I'm uninspired. That feels like I've betrayed the Dharma. No, you go right into your... The Dharma can hold anything in you. Anything. Anything. Your hate of the Dharma. I hate it. Won't last long, but you can... Sometimes you'd like to turn off the scene. You can't. Because you see yourself wanting to turn off the scene. So? It grows. And I want to talk about how the thinning is, it grows, and the heart grows through the thinning. As you get less, the heart gets more. Said differently, as the egoic sense of you becomes less emphasized, less invested in, that which is existence, that has always been there, which I call the heart, the existence itself, abiding in existence, becomes more and more available. Now you can lose yourself 1,000 different ways because all the practices can take you into refined areas that are extraordinarily pleasurable. And the part of you that still wants pleasure can find it most easily not from the awareness, because that seems in the thinning of the self, because that seems so forever, in the pursuit of your particular practice. Samadhi being one of those. But again, it's the sincerity of heart, your integrity, your honesty, that's all. That's the thing that keeps you going. It's like, it's not enough. I've been through this. I've had a life of pleasure seeking. It wasn't enough. I'm not going to use my life of spiritual development as pleasure seeking. That's not going to be enough either, because pleasure itself is just this much. And I'm not going to satisfy myself with something that's just this much. So I keep going. And then as you keep going, your heart keeps growing, and the longing keeps coming. The longing is for existence only. Only the seed of existence. See, the longing is life turning back on itself, creating the thinning so that you, your life, can join life. That's what it's doing. Life is coming at you. That's what the Dharma is. And cleaning you out so that you can be unabridged, complete in life itself. A statement of life. That's true authenticity. If you want to make something of your spiritual practice, you can, and you won't be authentic. So you just give yourself over to life. Let it have its way. And as the thinning occurs, the trust also occurs. The faith in the process also occurs. And the fear dissipates. There, for many people, there's a fear. There's that, I don't want to give myself up. You're just thinning. You never were. And therefore, you're not giving anything up. And the resolution of this is that you come back in with both parts, the relative and the absolute. It seems contradictory, and much of Dharma will, as the thinning occurs, because at this time, there's a moment. As the thinning occurs, how the mind has structured the world begins to thin as well. Because the mind, and the way it structured the world, was because of your need to be within it. And as that thins out, all the logic of self and all the logic of the world also begins to thin. So that means time, the timeless enters. You see, if you look at awareness, when you look at awareness as your own product, it's time-bound because you're creating it from your sense of you. That's why it's so difficult to maintain, because you're thinning yourself out as you're using it, and suddenly you want to come back into yourself, and you have to let go of the mindfulness in order to come back into yourself, you see? But as you begin to delight in the thinning process, you begin to delight in what it's showing you about what the truth of reality is. And one of the things it takes away is a sense of time. Time. So let's change metaphors for a moment. It means that the seed of existence is at the moment of here and now, right? Right here, present. It's always present. Everything's always present. We've invented time so we have longevity, so that we can have a life within the present. The present doesn't give you life. The present gives you the present. It's forever the present. We have to have life. We have to have time in order to have our lives. So I can have a memory of what I've done and a future of where I'm going. And that gives me a three-dimensional feeling of what my life is about. But that's not true in the present. And as we thin, we become closer to the present. We become the present. What keeps us from thinning is we keep having a conversation about the present, which keeps us distant to the present. That conversation can say, well, I'm close, but I'm not close enough, which is time. So we keep time between ourselves. Are people following this? Because I feel like, okay, good. This is when it takes over itself. It's fun to see, but I'm not ever sure whether people are following it. So. So many of you, many of you who I've known for decades, some of you I've known for decades and decades, have actually lived through this entire process that I'm just describing in me. If you think back where you first knew me, I was a very different kind of teacher than I am at the moment, and it's because this process has unfolded. And it will in every one of us if we just give it leniency, we give it permission, we get out of its way. And I'm using myself as an example, not to be egoically an example, but because it gives you encouragement. You're not dead still in your, you're always in movement to this. So just going back, I hope, catching the feeling of the present. See, when I have a conversation about the present, my life of time is within that conversation, and I exist within the conversation because I'm distant, I'm talking about the present rather than being present. So the quieter we become, the less conversation keeps us away from it. And the more the present is, the less we have to say. And the less we know about things. Because that's also what keeps us distinct, is I know about this and that because of the history and all of that. But it doesn't mean that you don't know. You see, this is where the contradiction comes. Corresponding to that, I'm still a human being with a knowledge base. It doesn't go away. Tell you my name, my history, everywhere, all of it's still there. So it's not like you go, who are you? It's not like that at all. In fact, it keeps you very humble because a lot of people just go out with this thing, lose their humanity, and then speak to you from some mountaintop. That's why I want to Buddhize. I don't want some haloed guy behind me. I wouldn't go to listen to him if he had a halo around his head. I want somebody that can relate as a human being. Say, God, my knee hurts. Those come together. You just have to trust me on this. I wouldn't lie to you. So if you're afraid of losing yourself, you're not going to lose yourself. You're going to lose yourself, but you're not going to lose yourself. You know what I mean? You become more yourself. And you can think in terms of time. A lot of times you just think in terms of time because that's what you need to navigate this. But you don't lose yourself. And at the same time, listen carefully, it's timeless. And those are side by side. They aren't even side by side, they're one and the same thing. That's a different subject, but they're one and the same thing. Form and formlessness have merged. That's enough for this morning.